Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the D1 Softball Podcast. Tara Henry here, joined by my co-host, Rhiannon Potke. We are in week 2 and have tons of stuff to talk to you about today. Rhi, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. This is week 2, man. We made it. We made it to week 2. We didn't, you know, we cleared all the tests. We're all still clear. We're still playing the game. So that's a win in my book.
Yes. And we're now on iTunes. So wherever you get your podcast, you can go on and search D1Softball.com. We're on our website and now available for you on iTunes. So first and foremost, schools are back. Some of the schools are back in session. Rhi, what are you seeing over on your side of the country at the moment?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of, staggered starts here with different conferences. Every conference kind of has their own rules and regulations about what the fall is going to look like for softball programs. We've known that. We've seen a lot of ACC teams go back. We've got some Big Ten teams back. SEC's back. So people are taking the field. They're doing some fall workouts, which is great to see. They're doing it with safety and precaution in mind. And it's very case by case. We know that they all have to follow not only conference, but they have their state and local health regulations. So you'll see some, on social media, you'll see some teams posting about, being back on the field. Some won't, just kind of case by case. To give you an example, I spoke with an SEC coach the other day, kind of what they're allowed to do. Obviously we talked about last week that there's really going to be no competition with outside institutions. It's going to be all intra-squad scrimmages. They're going to have a normal fall schedule. It's all fluid. I'm just going to put the disclaimer out there. The virus dictates everything. But if all the testing is normal and they don't get a super spread and no one's like 17 girls are in quarantine, which could happen, they'll have a normal fall schedule, but there'll be a lot of intra-squad scrimmages that they're planning to do. A lot of, disinfecting and safety and cleaning protocols taking place. All the bats are getting swiped down regularly. What the SEC had was a conditioning ramp-up period for every sport, not just softball. So after 4 weeks of that, they were finally allowed to have a full team practice. And each school's start date is different depending on when they started school and when they brought their athletes back to campus. So some could be just starting, some could be 2 weeks in, some could be still not, having started. And again, as we said, it's, school date, then local, state regulations. There's all these different staggering points that we have to figure out. 2 weeks into the conditioning ramp up, they're going to be allowed to start individual small group workouts, which you might see some hitting, some pitching lessons. And a few of those schools are reaching that point this week where they're starting those. So you'll see some individual sessions on the field. The full team fall ball for some, is going to begin, for instance, this one school on September 26th. But again, that's just basically inter-squad stuff. So that's an example of one conference, one SEC school. Different conferences have different regulations. And again, it's all guided by your local health and state. So California schools and, some of the Oregon schools have been more restricted, can't even go back to can't do anything yet until there's groups that are allowed of more than so many people. But that's where we stand. The good news is there are teams on the field and they're hitting and they're catching and they're doing softball things. So, and that's a win. That is a win right now.
Yeah, I know every time a school puts up one of their practice hype videos, I get so excited. I think I saw, we talked about Michigan being back on the field. They're at Alumni Field. We saw them on Twitter. And Indiana, they just posted a video today. They've got a transfer coming in, Mika Schroeder from Dartmouth. So she's a graduate transfer. We'll see what she's going to do for them. But, I spoke to another couple Big Ten coaches, and some of them aren't even, reporting back and waiting on COVID testing. And it's going to be really interesting when we get into preseason, because some of these teams are going to be able, to have fall ball and practice, while others are doing virtual sessions. Others aren't having practice at all. Some of them are working in pods, like you said, state and county regulations. So you've got a, school on the West Coast, they're allowed to actually practice in pods, but they cannot do group practice yet because it hasn't been cleared by the county. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this all pans out once we get into preseason, because there's going to be teams that have had team practice and been together while others haven't had that luxury. So I'm interested to see how this kind of pans out when we get closer to season. With that said, we'll go into a little bit of the FGCL. I know Ree thinks I'm a fangirl of the FGCL, and she is correct. The Florida Gulf Coast League, I absolutely love it. They have had a number of Division I players commit to the 2021 summer season down there in Bradenton. So I'm going to put together a little post to keep everybody updated on those teams. We've got the Slice, the Bradenton Slice. We've got the Rivermocks coming back, the Pioneers, and the Impact. They're going to announce a new team tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. And I know, excited. And the Circus, the new team that was announced about a month ago.
Are you going to be the GM?
I'm gonna see if we can do a California league over here.
Yeah, man. Satellite. Look at
that. No, I mean, Ryan Moore and Leslie Ginder over there, they've done a great job with that league.
And, it's phenomenal league. And we joke, but it's phenomenal. That was the place for college kids to play in the summer. That's, you know, together, and everything I heard from all the players that I did stories on is phenomenal. So I joke with you at the fangirl, but it's a great, great thing. We need more of them. I would love to see the Cape Cod for baseball. We need some of those leagues to pop up for softball.
Absolutely. So the Circus, which is coached by Carson Gordon, former Florida State Seminole, she's just announced her assistant, Alima Lopez, who is the current volunteer assistant at Ole Miss, former FIU player, and Team Puerto Rico. So she's added to the FGCL, and I'm excited to see how that league grows. I wouldn't be surprised if they've got 10 teams this next summer, up from 7, if not more.
That'd be great. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, I've heard from people in other, like you said, California, other states are kind of looking at it and thinking, can we do something sort of like it, and that's kind of what baseball has. I mean, obviously this summer, we always have to say this summer was different, but you know, barring everything goes back to what normal used to be like, and you could travel more. I would love to see that kind of maybe even stagger the start so we can have kids do multiple, without, wearing themselves out, obviously, but it'd be great because if we can have kind of regional like summer leagues that are based kind of like that, that would be a great byproduct of that. I think it's a great idea.
And I do think our sport is going to go that way, especially now in terms of COVID. We're going to have more regional pods that make sure that we're not getting on planes or traveling too far, and we're going to have more regional leagues and tournaments, just like you said. So whether that's east, west, north, south, in college ball. I know travel ball is going that way with the Alliance Fast Pitch, and PG softball is working as well to try and see how they can make those regional tournaments a little bit easier for teams. So that's going to be interesting to see how our sport changes in terms of combating COVID-19 and these restrictions. With that said, we are going to go straight into our interview with Danielle Lori. She is former UW all everything at Washington, All American. Yeah. I mean, I actually unfortunately hit against Danielle while she was pitching at Washington, and I would say still to this day she's got the dirtiest changeup I've ever seen. All right. So welcome, Danielle. Thanks for joining us on our second ever D1 softball podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing good. Hey, I'm home. The sun's shining. It's all good.
Oh, so you're at home now. You're on a couple days break from Chicago. Nice. Tell me how that's going, that AU Pro Sports. You're calling those games. We're loving your commentary.
Yeah.
Tell me what you're most surprised about being out there.
I was honestly the hitting, like right off the bat. I feel like that's really where I noticed that they didn't even mess around right out of the gate. So that's been kind of cool to like see how that's played out. Obviously we all know with Kat, like how good she is. And it was kind of cool to see her come in and make that type of an impact right away. I think that's huge for the sport. And I think having her in this league gives it a little bit of a more big league feel, you know, like having someone that has had that experience hoping to be a three-time Olympian. So it's pretty cool getting to see her do her thing still.
And so we talked about Kat a little bit. Out of the other pitchers, who do you think has done a great job adjusting now that we're going into week three? Who do you think is really going to excel?
I really liked Haley Wagner. I thought she did a pretty good job the night before. Obviously, you can't go without saying Alicia Ocasio, who doesn't surprise me as a two-way player, but I wasn't expecting her to have as much success right out of the gate that she has had with pitching. But when I put all the pitchers across the board, her ability to be able to change speeds is so much different than everybody else. So I think that has played a big factor. I think I've been a little bit shocked about Barnhill. Honestly, you know, it's a pure example of it has nothing to do with talent. It is 100% between the ears. And I'm hoping she can kind of figure it out because she's such a big name. She's relevant in our sport, freshly graduated. She's playing professionally over in Taiwan. So she's a player that I expect to get going. I will say the difficulty about this league is you're facing these hitters nonstop. So it's almost like you don't get a breath to be able to be like, oh, okay, it's a piece of humble pie almost every other day. So I think that is a challenge for some of these pitchers. Like I've seen O'Toole struggle a little bit. I've seen McQuillan struggle a little bit. And they're pitchers I hope that they can get going here week three. I think week three the pitchers are going to get a little bit better. So I'm excited to see.
I want to be a long time.
Can you be quiet while I finish?
and Danielle, who do we have joining us today?
We have a superwoman in Audrey. She's got her cape. And we have Maddie trying to get the dog with the broom. It is just mayhem.
Yes, awesome.
Take a breath.
We need to do our virtual reality show. Danielle Laurie and the mom, ends. Super mom over there, literally. I mean, with the cape.
We have Oreo on our face.
Yes.
It's been a nice break getting to go.
This is what we're talking about. Yes. Great.
Yes.
And then we'll go into the catchers really quick, and then we'll let you go because we know you're at home with the family. Really impressed with Bianca Stelli this past week. She's the captain for Team Italy. What do you see? You're there. What do you see from her?
Oh, you know, the first week, I think what is difficult about this league is if you don't get a crack at it right out of there. And honestly, she had kind of that rookie type feel, right? Because people, you know, she played at McNeese, which is a great school. But to say that that's a school where most of these athletes would be like, oh, yeah, I remember Bianca Stelli. Regardless, she had 75 bombs and she was one of the best. I think she was a player that had to prove herself. So it was someone that didn't get drafted super high right out of the bat and never got to start right away. But she's that type of player where she's put in so much work that when she gets those ABs and gets to have consistency, she's going to shine. And I think that that's extremely apparent right out of the gate. Like week two, she got to be able to play. And you can't deny her a roster spot now. She's someone who I would, you know, not say I would want her behind the dish consistently because she hasn't caught like in a while, but she's someone you need to have. And she has such a, you know, just this big league type swing where it's almost, you know, I hate constantly using this reference, but she swings like a dude, like her leg kick and just what she brings. So I like that. She seems like she has so much swagger. Like she just is as confident as ever. And the beauty of this league is that you can be that way. You're not scripted to be a certain way. There's no coaches. There's no one telling you how you need to act. Yeah, you don't want to be a dick, right? Because no one's going to want to pick you. I think the attitude piece is so contagious. So you'll notice that some of the better players are getting drafted lower. And I think at times, like, it really is the relationships that you're building and, like, the attitude that you're giving off because this is such a – you know, it's a grind, this 5-week deal. It's in this shield. You have to respect it. You're not allowed to go out and see Chicago. So it takes pretty special people to be in that environment to thrive, to follow the rules. And I think you can tell at times the ones that are struggling a little bit, the ones that are drafted a little bit lower.
Yeah, and I think from an outside perspective as well, when you're looking at that, your relationship piece, and even looking at the defense, because for me, if you're playing in the outfield, you're playing in the infield, and you know your right fielder, you know your left fielder so well because you play them every day, the teams are switching every week. How do you think that's affected some of the players? Do you see that affecting the players on defense?
Big time. That was kind of what Eric and I really saw from week one, especially when it was Nicole Penley's team. Like, it was just defensive splats everywhere, and Fagan's team. So, you know, I mean, you're fortunate enough at times to have some of the best NABs in the world. I mean, you got Hannah Flippin. She's going to be a consistent staple for you. But they are forever changing. Jaquish was at third last week. She's playing right field. And I think you just have to own your role and whatever that may be. And I think you have a short window of how you can train as a team and gel as a team. And from what I've gathered from talking to the players, the ones that do that the quickest and get the team chemistry, even though they only have 3 days to do it. Jesse Warren's team is that prime example right out of the gate. You know, they brought a lot of Florida State flavor into it. They did a lot of things Lonnie Alameda did, and that team gelled together really quickly. And you could tell they were just way better than everyone else, almost unfair. So that, I think, is the expectation for how these teams are. And, you know, even after talking to Vic Hayward, it's like, I'm kind of relieved I'm not a captain, because it was just this immense amount of pressure that you're not really used to. But to just add something more fun, the more national team players that I've talked to, the more that they've thoroughly enjoyed this, because they can 100% be themselves. They're not being coached. They can go and play and enjoy the game instead of, I think, the outside pressures of needing to compete for a roster spot for the Olympic Games, needing to perform at practice, needing to, you know, if a coach tells you we're practicing, for the most part, you're practicing. And I think in this league, you have that where it's like, dude, I'm sore today. I'm not gonna push it. I'm not going to put myself in that position. But the captains that can get the teams to communicate the best and get that set game plan of what the approach is huge. But you can see them being exposed in some areas with some firsts and thirds and stuff that you do. And as you know, at UCLA and at UW, I mean, the fall practices are where you're grinding out some of the hardest stuff, right? Where it's two-a-days, firsts and thirds, communication, cutoffs. And you're like, oh my God, this sucks. Can this be over? But they're trying to get that stuff jammed in a 3-week window. So I believe week three is going to be the best, where you're going to start to see sharper defense, fingers crossed, better spots by the pitchers, because that's the difference between Cat and the rest. Cat doesn't miss over the plate. So I'm hoping that, you know, week three, we start to just see better defense, because defense wins championships, as you know.
Yeah. And I go ahead, Reed.
Do you think on that vein, do you see players really starting to kind of piece together their rosters? Like, not just like that girl's extremely talented, but like, oh man, I need to make sure this part of the game's covered and this part, like, instead of building it by like friends or like talent or big names, are they really starting to appreciate that a little bit more?
Yes and no. It is clicky, but that's how it is with anything. Like, you're going to get your comfort level with your catcher. Like, Cat can't not go without Gwen, and that's apparent, you know. So the importance of her getting drafted where she can to get Gwen is huge. You're seeing the plotting and you're seeing the different personalities mesh together, and at times it's not necessarily the most talented teams, but it's like, just looking at Kat's team this week, I know after first week with Team Warren, like Vic was saying to me, like, Kat and I are trying to stick together this whole way through. So you're just going to see these different type of dynamics. Anybody wants Hannah Flippin. And then when you can add in Anissa Ortiz and the package that they have, you know, so it's weird, but I think the trends are real. I think the friendships are real. I think the team chemistry is real. And I just think respecting what's going on is, and that's why you're starting to see certain trends with the draft. As we know, catchers have to go up higher because the comfort level with the battery is number one, in my opinion, right? You need a good pitcher, but if you don't have someone good behind the dish, that's almost been surprising, seeing Monroe, who's the starting catcher for Team USA, not play. And not to say that you don't want a defensive specialist, but I see how important it is to be able to have a hitting catcher in this league. But then you reverse it and you go, okay, well, thinking about a 2021 games, your one role is to maybe throw out Yamada stealing from first to second, and that can be your one moment. So I would rather have a defensive catcher in that situation than hopefully someone that's just going to drop bombs. So it's been interesting to see the U.S. girls not get drafted necessarily where they want to be. It's been really interesting. That part's almost shocked me.
I was going to ask about Monroe because I was shocked the same thing. And I understand she's a defensive specialist. And
yes.
I don't know. As a pitcher, you want that comfort. And I was just really surprised she's not been drafted higher. I really am. I really was.
It's different. It's political. It's so many things that people are thinking that's the truth. But I will always speak my truth with this and, you know, tell people how it is. And at the end of the day, if you're on an Olympic roster and you're not playing or performing to where you want, attitude is contagious. So you have the choice to go into this to get better in so many ways to help you try to fight for an Olympic medal. So it's just allowing them to hear that. Like, even I had Kelsey Stewart reach out to me and just be like, thank you for that. I needed to hear that, because she's a player that is getting drafted super low, maybe not performing to her standards, but if there's stuff that you can get out of this that can help better you towards, you know, your Olympic dreams, then that's how you need to take it. And I think sometimes it's hard because performance trumps everything, right? Like, people are like, you want to perform, and when you don't, it can be hard.
Hey, Danielle, I really appreciate that about your, you know, as a, you know, I know sometimes with softball and in women's sports in general, there can be a lot of cheerleading because everyone wants it to succeed. Yeah. But in order to be credible, you need to be able to point out flaws, point out things that aren't good. And you need to be, that's legitimacy right there. And that's a breath of fresh air when I listen to your commentating, because you're not afraid to call, like, hey, call it how you see it. And I think sometimes we get too much into cheerleading. And that's, while it's good to kind of get people pumped about the sport, to get credibility, you need to have, like, you need to be able to tell that girl, you suck today, and you need to, and they need to take it. And I really appreciate that about you, because it's not just all, like, everything's great, rainbows and butterflies, because that's not real life. It's not sports.
And I was never raised that way, so it'd be tough for me to even try to be that too, like, fluff, because I'm not that. But I think when you've been so used to grinding and gone through so much good and bad, I mean, this platform allows for you to be comfortable in your abilities that speak for themselves, and to be able to be that. Because if someone was sitting on the couch watching me play and I wasn't performing to where I would want, I would hope someone would be okay with telling me I need to be better. And I think it's better for our sport, for a 12-year-old to watch and see Zirkel miss a ball in right field that she's supposed to make. I can't say that's a great attempt. I have to say, as a pitcher, I need that. That's a play that she normally makes, and you got to be better in that situation. And then that's game experience for a 12-year-old being like, oh, well, it wasn't a good effort. She needs to make that catch. I need to make that catch. So it's just trying to help continue to keep evolving the game and make these young women feel like complete badasses, because that's, you know, as a mama too, that's exactly what I want.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Danielle, for joining us. Enjoy your time at home.
Thank you.
Bye to the family and the puppy.
Thank you. Yeah, she's over there. We got Audrey bringing out the ice cream truck. I mean, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
This is the best podcast interview we've had.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Bye, you guys. Bye. Bye.
We need that. Like, we had the dog. We got, like, all the kids. Like, it's just, I love that. That's real life right there, especially in the quarantine, baby.
Oh, she really is a breath of fresh air. And I think, you know, having her on the telecast, and just, she really says what everyone is thinking. And it's just, it makes this AU Athletes Unlimited League fun for me to watch, because, you know, like she said, she's not going to sugarcoat it. And I love that about Danielle. She's always been that way. And as a player, gosh, she was tough to play against too. She's always been a competitor. She always held herself to such a high standard. And she's the same way in the booth. So that was fun.
And that's what all women's sports needs. I mean, everyone's so worried about survival, and we should be. And so they're always cheerleading. But the reality is, if we want to get treated equally and get that, you need to also be able to take that, you know, you need to be able to play it straight. I mean, that, like, I love that. I mean, I think I don't think you have to be defensive on that. And she comes from a place where her credentials back it up. So, and she's not doing it out of spite. She's doing it as a legitimate journalist, which is amazing and awesome. And I really appreciate that about her. I think we're getting better with that too. I think we've seen that kind of more with some of the analysis, that you can't be afraid to point out mistakes, because that's what you're seeing. I mean, you can't lie. It's in front of you. So it's a breath of fresh air to listen to her broadcast. I love it. So
yeah. And she gave us a little breakdown of what's going to happen in week 3. I don't know if you were able to catch any of the games this past weekend. Who were you most impressed with, or did you, anything catch your eye?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she pointed out, I was, you know, I mean, with the Haley McClellan in this outfield, like, always catches my eye. That diving catch on Monday night was, you know, honestly, it was amazing, but not surprising. I was like, oh, isn't she like, isn't that like what the whole center field at Alabama shows? Like, she's already doing that. Like, they have a mural of her doing that every day. You know, Nursa Myers, like, just the fact that she's like, I don't think many people know about her, and she's getting pitched around like she's Barry Bonds, and then they give her one and she hits the scoreboard, and I'm like, that's why she's getting pitched around. I mean, there's the usual. I think we talked about, you know, Kat Osterman is just ridiculously impressive. We spoke about Erica, who was impressive, and Hannah Flippin is Flippin' Good. That's just kind of like, that should just be her name, is Flippin' Good. But one of the things that she mentioned too is just, I, you know, the lack of the pitching depth is really getting exposed a little bit. You know, I just, and I know like there's not many, but I'm curious to see if they're going to have to expand like some of the, you know, or get more pitchers. Cause I just, it's the, it really, you saw a drop off as the games went on, you know, outside of Kat, there's been a few innings here and there by good, you know, great pitching, but she's been really only consistently great one. And when you're seeing a pitcher that many times, I understand that, but that's been kind of to me like, wow, there's just, if unless Kat's in the circle, it's pretty much like, who knows how many runs are going to get scored.
Yeah. I mean, like she said, Danielle was saying that she's so surprised how the bats came alive and in week one. And again, when you're not playing with a defense that you're used to, that makes it tough as well. So the ball's getting hit pretty hard and, you know, you got to rely on your defense. So I spoke a little bit about this, but I would love to see how they implement defensive points somewhere, somehow, because there's just been some crazy plays.
If a catcher throws out a runner, they need points. I'm sorry. Like, there's got to be, like, I don't care if they give him like a half point or 1 point. I mean, there's got to be a point for throwing out a runner at second, third, whatever. I mean, that's just, that's what your job is. And I think that, I agree with you. I think there needs to be a little bit of, I mean, we see that in a lot of fantasy-like things. Defense really always gets underplayed, but I'd agree with you. I'd love some defensive stats. That McClellan catch should be worth like 50 points, like automatically, like free reign, you know, or like someone, they should have a vote. Like, how many points is this worth? Like, they should, you know, feasibly like take like the top five highlights and then they get ranked and that's how many points you get, you know, like at the end of the three games, like, or the end of 3 days.
Yeah. Like, or even a fan vote, even a fan vote, like, you know, clip that diving catch and, you know, or clip any of these defensive plays and have the fans vote on it. It's just, there needs to be that aspect that brings in defense, as Danielle was saying, defense wins championships. And we all know that. So, but it's been fun to watch. I'm excited to watch week three. I did my own little mock draft, with the Running Polls podcast, a few of them. That was quite interesting. So I've got a little team up. So that'll be, I'm guessing I will be watching a little bit more intently this weekend, rooting for a few players. I did get Kat. I get the number one draft.
Oh, wow. Look at that. So yeah, you're pretty solid.
And I got Hannah flipping. But most of my team is pretty similar to Janie Reed's squad. So I'll be pulling for the blue team a lot this week. With that said, any final thoughts, Ree?
No, not really. I just, I'm glad to see people back on softball fields. I hope this continues. Everyone wear a mask, socially distant from people that aren't in your immediate family, because we want to see sports back, and that'll help. We need to do that. So just that the reminder that everyone's probably sick of hearing now, wear a mask and stay far. Go 12 feet just to be, you know, just to make sure extra safe, man. Like, the distance between home and first, do that, 40 feet, I don't care. Go near people that have, and we can ensure softball comes back for real. I just want to make sure that it stays, that we don't have to be able to do it.
You heard it here first. Ree Podge is asking for 60 feet social distancing.
Let's be really safe.
60 feet.
I think we would, you know, that might be a little unrealistic. I don't think you can grocery shop and still do that, but hey. A girl can dream, right? It's just like more realistic. You're an athlete. You think, okay, or I guess maybe free throw line to the basket. Let's just, like, whatever sport you're in, just make it more than 6 feet. I guess it's a hockey stick apart is what they said. So go hockey stick, I guess. A bat's too short. So
I love it. Well, Ree, thank you. And that is it for our episode 2 of D1 Softball Podcast. Tara Henry here, joined by Rhiannon Potke. We'll see you next week.